Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back into the Card Chronicle podcast. It is the morning of Thursday, September 15th. Mike Rutherford here in Louisville, Kentucky. Danny Snard in Columbus, Ohio. And since we last talked, there has been some new shit has arisen. We have some new developments here. For starters, we'll start with this. The podcast last week, it was basically like 45 minutes of Dan and I just kind of being very upset about the Syracuse loss. Sharing how pessimistic we were about not just the season, but the overall state of Louisville football. And then out of nowhere, hard left turn Snard at the end of the podcast is like, by the way, we're gonna beat UCF. It's happening. I mean, the text line on the radio show, I had like six or seven texts that day being like, Snard dropping a bomb on the end of the podcast. Like, people were shocked. He was the only person that I saw thinking this could happen. Like, every other prediction, whether it was national, local, whoever, thought UCF was going to run away with this thing. And Dan Snard, the Scott Satterfield whisperer. You know this man. You have a PhD in Scott. The Cards get the job done, 20-14. We'll start the podcast. You can take a victory lap. I mean, you nailed this one. I was totally wrong. You were totally right.
Just want to thank my wife and kids. Without their support, I wouldn't be the man I am today. I consider myself no, but in all seriousness, I don't know. Like, college football is just a weird sport like that. Like, when you're in the off season for college football and you kind of look at it, everyone has this tendency, including myself, to where they're like, all right, we're going to win this game, probably going to lose this one, and then we're going to win this. Like, those are winnable games, and there's eight wins right there. And it never, ever happens like that. Like, ever. And it takes like a week or two to realize, like, okay, we're back, and this is how unpredictable this sport is. And I mean, believe me, the guess that we were going to win was simply that. It was a guess just based on, hey, I feel like we are going to get closer to our kind of average median wins, but we might just be taking a different route this year. So that's kind of why I picked it. But believe me, there was no rhyme or reason. I mean, when I go to Vegas and do this, I get cleaned. Not going to toot my horn there, but, absolute great night. And one other thing, and I tweeted this out. I mean, God, I could not be a college coach because I carry these losses so much longer and harder than I carry these wins. Like, I was so pessimistic during the first half. Like, I was hate watching the game.
Everybody, I
shouldn't be doing that. Like, I was at like every, even the good plays, I'm like, well, I'm sure they'll do something stupid next play. but then like, I like found myself, I'm like, all right, you know what? Like, they're playing their ass off out there. Like, all they've done is lose one game on the road. Like, granted, I mean, it was Syracuse, who knows how they're going to turn out, but it was a tough environment. Like, let's give these kids a chance. They worked all off season for this. And my God, I mean, the defense, we had never seen that out of a Brian Brown defense yet. We can get into it a little bit more, but just a great win and great to get some momentum back on our side.
You're not alone in like the overly pessimistic, like hate watching during the first half of the game. If you were an average person who didn't know what was going on in the game and you were only following based on the updates from Louisville Twitter, At halftime, you would have thought we were down 47-3. Like you would have thought that this was the biggest blowout in the history of college football. Like, everybody, including myself, is just like, we're firing off these jokes. We're like, woe is me. This defense can't stop anybody. Oh my God, these guys suck. And then it didn't exactly turn on a dime, but it was like a slow build. The defense just starts stringing some stops together. The offense makes some big plays at big times. And I threw the stat out there on the radio show. I threw it out there on the game day post last week as well. Like, Louisville under Scott Satterfield had never won a game when scoring 21 points or less. They were 0-9 in those games. And for that streak to be broken against UCF, who's known for, you know, ridiculous offense, putting up gigantic points, and our defense not being, you know, overly good and certainly not looking very good against Syracuse, was just a stunner. The way it happened was almost as shocking as the fact that it happened, period. The 20-14 game, grinding it out, defensive stops, like continuing to keep them in the game, and then the defense just continuing to step up when they had to, was just sort of this. If we were going to win, I would have thought it was going to be like last year. I would have thought it was going to be like 49-45. For it to have been 2014 was a little bit of a stunner. It's also a little bit concerning with the offense. We could talk about that a little bit later. But just in more of like an overarching thing here, what do we do with this? What do we do with this win now? Because I think the majority of the fan base is like, you know, there's a segment that still is like, this guy sucks, this team sucks, I'm out. There's a segment that is like, I told you guys, you know, we're fine, Scott's the guy, we're moving forward. I think the majority of the fan base is like, it was fun to celebrate a win. I was happy being happy last weekend. When Louisville wins, everything's better. Like, that was great. But I'm still not completely sold that we're going to do good to great things this season, and that Satterfield's the guy long term. I need to see more than just a win over UCF. That blowout loss to Syracuse is still lingering in my mind a little bit. Where are you with this now?
I mean, I mentioned this on the beginning of the season pod. I mean, this is just roller coaster Scott. Like, this is what you're gonna get. Like, one week he's hot, the next week he's not. One week he's hot. Like, it's hard to really pin this guy down. But this is what I'll say. I get more satisfaction out of winning a game defensively than I do outscoring a team. I just do. And for whatever reason, I feel like it's better for the outlook of the season that way. I just think we got too much talent on offense to really keep being held down. And we're moving the ball for, you know, whatever reason, we're settling for field goals. You know, Tyon Evans gets stripped on that long run, kind of a weird play. I'm not as worried about the offense, but I really did need to see something out of the defense. And now we know it's there. Now, granted, you know, Florida State could be a completely different animal. I mean, I think from an athlete standpoint, I'm not saying UCF was dog shit by any means. I mean, they run a great offense. Everyone knows Gus Malzahn's kind of got that tempo thing going, but I think we might be facing a run game here that's, you know, coming up on Friday night that's going to be very tough to stop. But if we can string a couple of these together on defense, I think that's going to go a long way. So if you're asking me if I'm in or out, I'm in, baby. I'm in. I'm back. I'm back. So I wish I could go to the game on Friday. It's my son's birthday this weekend. We got soccer games, his birthday party, you know, my wife's birthday as well. So whatever. But anyways, I'm really hoping that the stadium's packed and we get behind this team. Because honestly, I mean, we're 1-1 with a good road win. Like, remember we talked about, like, hey, if we come back 1-1, like, I would say most fans would be somewhat satisfied with that. And we are. And, you know, now it's time to go out and, you know, defend our home field.
I don't know why, but I can't stop smiling at Roller Coaster Scott. I think such a funny, ridiculous nickname. Old RC, there he is, Roller Coaster Scott, doing his thing. I mean, it's totally right, though. Like, I do the post every single year at Clark Chronicle. I've done it since 2006, for God's sake. I've done it since the old, like, the card report before Clark Chronicle, where I do game-by-game predictions. And I used to always, like, be so proud of the fact that before Satterfield got here, there had only been one season all these years. I think, like, what, I guess 14, 13 seasons where I'd been off by more than one game. And it was Steve Cragthorpe's first year. I thought that, you know, I was young, naive, had not been cragged yet. I thought we were going to go 11-1.
You're a young boy, just a young pup.
Just you know, living life, thinking that talent mattered more than coaches. I thought we'd go 11-1. We went 6-6. That was the first big and only big swing and miss. And then Satterfield gets here. I think I predicted 3-9 his first year because 2018 had been so bad, and he wins 7 games in the regular season. Then I predicted 8-3 in the COVID year. We went, I think, 4-7 that year. And then I was closer last year. I went 7-5. We went 6-6. But my point is, I've got no goddamn clue what this man's going to do on a week-to-week basis. I can't figure him out at all. You've got the PhD in Scott. I can't figure out old RC. I don't know what to do with Friday, and I'm admitting this before we even come close to our prediction segment. I've got no idea what's going to happen tomorrow night. Nothing would shock me at all. This is just classic Scott. But the UCF game, I guess we'll start with the defense because Brian Brown, look, we're not apologizing to him yet. It's one game. It was a fantastic game, but we're going to need to see a little bit more before we start like getting on our knees and saying keeping this guy around was the right thing to do. And also, let's just be real, UCF has a ton of speed. They marched it right down the field their first couple of possessions, and I think everybody was terrified. As the game went on, and Uvell deserves some credit for this, but John Rhys Plumlee, I think, showed that he's not a passer. He showed why Ole Miss moved into receiver, which Andre Ware mentioned approximately 73 times in the first 30 minutes of the game. But Louisville, they did what they weren't able to do with Garrett Schrader. They kept him in the pocket and made him miss or made him beat him with his arm, and he couldn't do it. Like, the coverage got better. Schrader basically got out of the pocket whenever he wanted to, picked up plays with his feet, and then also was making, you know, Louisville pay with his arm as well. He was hitting open guys. Plumlee couldn't do that. And also the secondary stiffened up a little bit. I thought Brownlee, after a rough start, really stepped up. Keitrell Clark played better. They had some help for Brownlee on the other side, too. Kendrick Duncan had a fantastic game with 13 tackles.
Oh, he was incredible. To me, he was the player of the game. He was like, being transparent here, I had to watch the game on a phone. So, like, I couldn't really tell who was making the plays. I did go back and, like, watch it, like, during the week, just so I was like, all right. But he was everywhere, man. Like, props to him. He was awesome.
He was great. I thought Yaya Diaby played one of his best games as a Cardinal. He had a bunch of plays behind the line of scrimmage. It seemed like every time we needed a big stop, he really stepped up. Momo Sanoco, who was kind of, I don't know, just didn't really make much of an impact in the Syracuse game, had a couple of big plays that it was really nice to see him not just be like a vocal leader, but to actually step up and make big plays for his team. I thought the entire secondary was good. Monty Montgomery's still a little bit, I think we're still kind of waiting to see the old Monty. He missed a couple of tackles. He wasn't terrific. Yasir Abdullah, kind of the same thing. I think we're waiting for both those guys to step up and remind us of who they were when they were healthy last year. Ashton Gelati, I thought, was good once again. Destel got some good push up front, which he's going to have to, because we found out right before the game, Jermaine Lole is out for the entire season, which was a huge bummer. That sucks. But the defense, I mean, 10 consecutive stops to end the game. I didn't think they could stop Doss High School 10 consecutive times, and they're out there doing it against a UCF team that has been very, very good on offense over the years. Are you with me, though, in saying, like, as impressive as that was, as fun as that was to see, and you like you said, you're a guy that loves to win with defense, I'm going to have to see it a little bit more before we do this whole, like, yeah, Brian Brown, we're sorry, you're smart, we're dumb, you're cool, we're nerds. Like I need more than just one game.
Oh, I mean, 100%. Like, you know, I definitely agree there. I would say my favorite part of the defense is a bunch of different guys made big plays. I mean, it wasn't just one guy the whole game. I mean, we had new guys stepping up, like, the entire game. And I was noticing, like, the rotation on the defensive line. Now, granted, it's kind of easier to notice that because, you know, UCF likes to go quick. And then when they sub, we can sub. So it's pretty noticeable, like, when we have guys coming in. But we did just seem a little bit fresher than we usually do. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those deals where, I mean, I hate to even say this because, I mean, we know UCF, like, they've been, I mean, do you want to call them a power? Sure. Like, they've been in the national football landscape for a couple years now. But like you said, I just can't 100% buy in until we see like a string of like 2 to 3 games like this. But I mean, they did everything that we wanted to the second half. I mean, they were flying around the ball. There was, you know, white shirts literally everywhere, like attacking every single ball carrier. We did get a couple, I would say, breaks. Now, granted, the one touchdown that got called back for the holding. The holding I did not see, but Quincy Riley definitely got pushed off on, and they did not call that. So, but I was
well, hold on. We got to do the thing we're going to do. This is the podcast rule. If we're going to talk about officiating, we got to start it with there are bad calls on both sides.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Bad calls on both sides, but we're just and now we go on and we talk about just the bad calls that went against us.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, the Tyler Hudson or the Marshawn Ford, you know, take back of the flag was brutal. I know there was another one I'm missing here, but
the roughing the kicker that they
yeah the running. Roughing the that was the one. But
you don't touch Mark Bassett and get away with it. It's always like, roughing when you touch Mark.
Great.
Bassett. He's
been a very pleasant surprise. Now I will say I love doing this. What was the most mad you got during the game? Because mine was the missed field goal. I may have just spilled off some expletives that filled a whole restaurant.
Mine was, and this is a perfect segue because I did want to talk about this next. Mine was when we went for it on fourth down at the end of the fourth quarter.
You know what? Go ahead, say what you're gonna say.
I know that you were certainly more okay with it than I was, and this has been an ongoing discussion this week in local media. Like the radio people, we've had this discussion. I know that some like the websites have gotten into it, and it's easy to play revisionist history now on both sides. On one side, like I can say, you know, he didn't get it. It was we gave UCF a short field. That was really silly. On the other side, people who who waited till after the play can say the play should have worked. If Marshawn Ford just catches it, we get the first down. Great call, Scott. My whole thing at the time was, well, one, we come out there, we line up, we get them to use a timeout. And I'm like, okay, savvy move. Great play, Scott. Like, maybe that timeout ends up costing UCF down the line. Cool. Now let's punt the ball. Like, defense is killing it. Bassett's killing it. Let's pin them deep. Let's get one stop. Let's end the game. We come back out with the offense again, and I'm like, okay, we're trying to draw them offside. This seems silly. They're definitely not going to jump, but whatever. We've got, I think, 2 timeouts left at this point. Let's try it. When we snapped the ball, I thought I was seeing things. I was like the world stopped. Like, everything just started spinning. I'm like, we're running a fucking play? Are you kidding me? And then it doesn't work, and I absolutely flipped out, and I tweeted out, like, what the fuck are we doing? And, you know, of course, like, after the game, a bunch of people were like, we're winning. That's what we're doing. I'm like, okay, man. Like, you know, thanks for waiting 45 minutes to respond to this tweet. But I, at the time, was furious about this. Now, before I let you say, like, why you were okay with it, I take back some of my fury. I heard Scott Satterfield explain this on his Monday radio show, and I thought it was, like, you know, when you tip your cap, you tip your cap. Like, I thought he gave an accurate explanation for why. His thing was, one, they thought they had a play that was going to pick up the first down, obviously. You don't run that if you don't feel confident in being able to pick it up. And then, two, he said, based on the field position and the time left on the clock, if we didn't get it there and UCF wound up scoring, U of L still would have had enough time to come back down, get in field goal range, and win the game. Whereas if they punt it, pin it deep, more than likely UCF's going to be using more time on the clock to go the extra 50, 60 yards. And if they did score at that point, the game would essentially have been over. So he was playing the analytics game. There's a whole Twitter account, there's a whole website that dedicates itself just to, like, go for it or punt situations and, like, plays out all the numbers. And what they came up with was, if Louisville punts in that situation, they win the game 80% of the time. If they go for it, they win the game 79% of the time. So essentially it was a 50-50 toss-up. I thought it was ridiculous at the time. I still would have punted it just because the defense had made 9 consecutive stops at that point. But I'm less over the top with it now than I was before I heard Satterfield explain himself. But you thought it was the right call.
I mean, I like a coach that I mean, again, this is a non-analytics thing here. But I like that the coach trusts his offense and trusts his play calling enough that where he knows he has a play that's going to pick this up. And I mean, he did. That should have been a first down. I mean, it just was not executed. I think if they run that play 9 out of 10 times, it does get executed. But you know, and then I look at UCF. Yes, our defense played out of their minds, but I would still look at them as a team where their strength, you know, is going to be their offense. And I think Scott just wanted to keep them off the field. And I totally understood that at the time. You know, it didn't work. That sucked. And I definitely, you know, if we would have lost, he would have definitely caught some heat. I totally get that. But, you know, I like a coach that wants to go in there and actually, you know, win the game and not play. I'm not saying punting would have been playing scared, but, you know, just me. I mean, I think all fans have differing opinions on this. I liked that, you know, he had some balls and he went for it there. It showed me a little bit.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
It felt to me, it was kind of, like, to me, it just felt like the overcorrect when you're driving. Like the guy who like is, you accidentally just barely gets outside of the white line of the highway and then just swerves three lanes over to overcorrect. Like Scott, he knows that the one of the things that the fans are so upset about is his inability to finish games. You know, all the fourth quarter collapses last year, all that stuff. Like he doesn't. The decision making, the clock management. And so he's like, all right, we're just going to put it away right here. And we're like, no, not right now. Like, use some nuance. Look at the situation. The defense is playing lights out. It just felt like he was trying to do a little too much with the whole, like, yeah, foot on the throat. I did that. But I again, with more time passing between the decision when it happened and you know, now, I can see where the people who supported the move are coming from a little bit more than I could then. I still would have punted it, but it's not quite as black and white as I thought it was at the time. At the time, I was about ready to just lose it. Like, I almost broke the TV. I was like, we're going to lose the game because of this. What are we doing? But Brian Brown's defense, once again, just steps up.
Also, I was going to say, we'll call you the Kirk Ferentz of the podcast, guy.
Yeah. Well, just, yeah, I mean, Kirk would have punted it on third down. So, it's not get that far. There was also a part of that was like, if you're Brian Brown, are you just like, what the fuck, dude? Like, I'm having the best night I've had since I got here. Like, let me shine a little bit. Stop trying to put me in a situation where I can be like the goat once again, the bad goat, not the good goat. I'm sure he wasn't exactly thrilled with the decision to go for it, but the defense stepped up and got it done. And they got it done another series after that. They made two stops.
I know that's what, like, when I went back and watched the game, like, I almost forgot. Like, I was like, Jesus, I forgot we punted again. And then
they got close.
I mean, there was a couple plays on that second to last drive. Like the one where they hit on the slant and he got away from Brownlee, but Kendrick Dunn came up with like a game saving, like open field tackle.
Yes.
That one was big. And then when they got it down on the goal line, they got it. I think they had like a second and goal from the 10. I think they got it down to like the 2 or 3. And on that third down play, Yasir Abdullah, you know, fired in from the edge and pretty much got him for like a no gain or a 1 yard loss there. I thought both those plays kind of were overlooked and helped change the game there.
No, I totally agree. Those two plays were enormous. You made a good point too about like guys that we've heard of but haven't really seen do much stepping up and making huge plays. Like Dorian Jones had one of our tackles for a loss.
Yep.
That was an enormous play. Mason Rieger, who just got a scholarship before the season started, made a tremendous play. It was one of those where he dove at the running back's feet, and if he doesn't get him, it probably goes for like a 20-yard gain, and instead it was a 1-yard loss. So just to see all those guys stepping up, especially in big-time situations, was awesome. What do we do with Malik? Because this was the second straight game where Malik, with his arm at least, hasn't been great. I think maybe the biggest takeaway on offense was Louisville came into the season wanting to play a specific way. Like they wanted traditional run game and then Malik beating teams with his arm, right? Like they wanted Tyon Evans to get a ton of carries. They wanted Malik to get fewer carries. And it was almost like they tried it at Syracuse and right away we're like, well, this doesn't work. Like Malik's going to have to do a whole lot of damage again with his legs, because they came out on that first drive, which was so impressive. And they had like three or four runs in a row that were either design runs for Malik or runs that were gave him the option to keep himself. And you could tell UCF kind of knew that what Louisville's game plan had been against Syracuse, because they were just keying on Evans. They weren't keying on Malik at all. And every time he pulled the ball and kept it for himself, he had big, you know, he had gigantic like avenues of green field in front of him. And you could also tell U of L told Malik, like, you know, get out of bounds when you can, get down when you can. We want you to run, but if it's a decision between getting out of bounds or potentially cutting it up and getting 3, 4, 5 yards but taking a hit, get out of bounds. Because that's the smart thing. It's a long season. Every game's a long game. But they very clearly were like, okay, we can't beat teams without design runs for Malik, so we're going back to that. And it worked for the most part. Malik just, he didn't hit open guys. Receivers, I don't think, created enough space.
Yeah.
He could have put the game away on third down. We mentioned we gave them two opportunities to score late. After we went for it on fourth down and got that stop, all he has to do is complete a wide open third down pass to Braden Smith over the middle, and he short hops it. So I don't know where your concern level is with Malik. I mean, Scott Satterfield basically said, like, he's got to be better in the passing game this week. We know he can run, but he's got the arm. He's got open guys. He's got to make the throws. It's pretty simple, but it's also pretty true.
I think you absolutely nailed it there, because, I mean, I was one of the ones that was like, hey, I would like to see traditional drop back Malik, and I don't want to risk getting him hurt for the year, you know, by running and taking these hits. But I just don't think the offense is going to be able to work unless you have some design runs in there. And I think that's going to open up more stuff, you know, for some of these receivers, which, you know, quite frankly, I'm starting to get a little bit concerned about.
Yep.
I don't know that, like, I don't know if they have the kind of separation they want from defensive backs at this moment. I just don't think Malik is accurate enough, you know, for, you know, to throw to receivers that don't have a lot of space. Now, Grant, we know he can make some of those throws. I just don't think he hits on them 100% of the time. So, I don't know. It's weird. Like, every time I watch our offense, like, I'm like, I don't think we're playing that bad. And then, you know, next thing you know, we're either punting or we're settling for a field goal.
The thing about this offense is, real quick, I feel like this offense, everything has to go perfect, right? Like,
yeah,
you said, everything will be going, like, one mistake derails an entire drive. Like, they'll be moving the ball effectively. We'll have the right play calls. And you're like, all right, this is great. We're looking good. And then if there's one time where we have, like, 2nd and 5 and we get a holding call that makes it 2nd and 15, we're done. Like, the drive stalls. Or if there's one time where we have a play that works perfectly, but a dude just drops the ball or Malik misses him, we're done. Like, that's kind of – because I'm with you. Like, every time I watch this offense, I'm like, it looks like we're playing well. Like, these plays are working, but then a drive will just get derailed in the snap of a finger. We don't seem to be able to overcome any sort of mistake.
Is there anything on offense that you're like, I kind of want to see more of this? Because, like, I truly, like, I mean, I can't really pinpoint anything. I'm like, I mean, I like when they hand the ball off to Evans. I feel like we're targeting Tyler Hudson, you know, a decent amount. I guess if there's one thing I'd like to get Marshawn Ford a little bit more involved, it seems like good things happen when he touches the ball. But I honestly, I can't pinpoint, like, one thing where I'm like, they need to do more of this if they want to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious answer is, I guess, more shots downfield. But the issue is we don't have that guy. At least we haven't seen him yet, who can take the top off the defense. We don't have the Tutu Atwell or the Tyler Harrell from last year. We tried in the first game with D. Wiggins, and he got open. And maybe if Malik throws the ball a little bit sooner, that's a touchdown. But, like, also, Wiggins didn't fight for that ball in the end zone. Like, at the very least, it should have been knocked down, and he didn't make a great play on that. Like, I don't know if he's the type of big play threat who can get you there. Now, Satterfield seems to believe, based on his press conference on Tuesday, that we have those guys, and it's just on Malik to get them more involved. Like, he was putting the onus on Malik. He was sort of saying, you know, we've got weapons, we're just not spreading the ball around enough. Malik's got open guys, he's just not finding them. And watching the games, I haven't really seen that. I think it's on both sides. I think the receivers aren't creating separation. We don't have explosive guys there. But Malik, according to Satterfield, Malik, he's got to do more.
You know what? Like, the one guy I forgot to mention this, that I really do like when we get the ball in his hands, is Amari Huggins-Bruce.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like good things happen when he touches the ball. He's been able to make runs after the catch. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, I trust Scott more than I trust myself. If he thinks it's on Malik, you know, if that's to boost the wide receivers' confidence, or I have no idea. Maybe that's just coach speak. But yeah, I mean, it would be nice to hit on more big plays, and you know, maybe plays over 20, 30 yards. But I don't know. I feel like this offense is close to busting out. I mean, we've had two road games. It's hard to score on the road. I mean, it just is. I'm excited for these guys to get home and not have to deal with the crowd noise. And I guess we'll see what happens then.
I really wanted Scott to like take his shirt off after the game or something. Just
I'm
go
glad
wild.
He was. No, you know what? Okay, let's talk about this. I mean, because I went through your Twitter mentions and I saw people like clamoring for like an emergency pod. Like, and hey, I mean,
calm
I was.
Down.
I was excited. First off, I was in no state to give an emergency pod. Like, I was on a golf trip. I was sloppy. I had the best golf day maybe in my entire life. We could talk about that later. but anyways, I was in no state to give an emergency pod. But like, what happened last year? I mean, I was like, guys, what happened last year after we gave the emergency pod at UCF? Like, the rest of the season went to shit. Like, let's let this season play out, you know. When we feel it's right for an emergency pod, we're like, all right, we're on a fucking roll here. Then we'll do one. But I don't want to jump the gun too early. And I'm glad Scott, you know, treated this like a win and not like a take your shirt off Gatorade bath.
The standards that these heathens who love the podcast have for the emergency pod are so low. Like, it's become like kind of a joke now. Yeah. Anytime something somewhat positive happens, like, I'll check my mentions and it'll be like people celebrating, and then it'll be like 35 people are like, emergency pod, get Dan on the phone. I'm like, we're not doing an emergency pod. The standards have to be a little bit higher than that.
I agree.
I will say, like, the emergency podcast episodes by and large are our most listened to, so maybe we should do more of them. But the last two podcasts that we've done, and I mentioned this on Twitter, are actually the two most downloaded that we've had besides emergency podcasts in the now, what, 2.5 years we've been doing this. So, props to and thanks to everybody who kind of stuck with us over the disappearance over the summer. We're back. I mean, somebody on the text line yesterday for the radio show was like, I don't know what's more surprising, Louisville winning at UCF or Mike and Dan doing two consecutive podcasts in 2 weeks. I'm like, we're here. The season's here. Yeah. Like, now we're focused. We're locked in.
We're games guys. We're not off season guys. We're games guys.
Talk about summer. Summer. Talk about the season. You mentioned that going on the road, like, it should be mentioned, and I don't know if we brought it up on last week's podcast, but UCF damn near unbeatable at the bounce house over the last 5 years. They've since 2017, they've had four perfect home seasons. They had been 31-2 at home before Friday night's game. Obviously, we don't know how good this year's team is going to be, but still, to beat them at home, no small feat. The only other two teams to do it were a top 10 Cincinnati team and then a Tulsa team that was pretty good in 2020, the COVID year. So no small accomplishment to go down there and beat them at their place, especially with that environment being pretty raucous. I mean, it was a packed house. It was a Friday night game. It was not an easy place to play, and Louisville got the job done. So it's a win that's been celebrated this week. It should be celebrated this week. It obviously will only, you know, it's only going to last so long. If Louisville comes out and looks terrible tomorrow night against Florida State, it's not going to matter that much. But if Louisville wins against Florida State, it's only going to seem like a bigger deal. So it was just good to feel good for a weekend. Like, you know, Saturday we had Virginia's birthday party, so I'm running around trying to get stuff ready for that. You know, Sunday we had kids over the house. And, like, doing all that little shit, it feels so much better when you're coming off of a Cardinal victory. It just does, whether it's, you're thinking about it, like, up front or whether it's just subconsciously. It just makes life a little bit better. So it was nice to have those few days where just the sun shined a little bit brighter.
Yeah, 100%. And we're going to go back to my golf game here on Saturday.
You got to go to the golf trip. We went last year. I didn't get to go this year because I have not been feeling well. But
and
yeah,
we missed you. Yeah, that sucked. Yeah. We hated that you weren't there. But like, we go down this kind of like Ryder Cup style, you know, trip every year. And on Friday, I mean, I just played off my ass, like won my match, hit a big putt on 18 in front of a crowd of like 12 people where I got to do like a Tiger fist pump and like run around the green, almost got closest to the pin, almost had a hole in one in front of a big crowd. Like, everything was absolutely clicking for me that day. And then I got off the course and like I walked in and James Turner's pushing the field goal. Right. I was like, don't fuck this up for me, James. But no, you're exactly right. Like, there's just a kind of a hop in my step, you know. Here I'm actually in Cleveland, Ohio right now. I know you said Columbus. I didn't want to correct you, but I'm in Cleveland just driving around, listening to International Players Anthem with the windows down, going on work calls here. So
that's Cleveland again.
I mean, I'm humming right now. But like you said, a victory on Friday, and we can really kind of, you know, I don't want to say change the outlook for the season, but definitely going to start looking at it through some rose-colored glasses.
Yeah, the way that I've been describing it is the UCF win, it doesn't fix what happened against Syracuse, but it kind of brings it. It doesn't reset the season either, because I think you're still concerned about, you know, losing so badly to Syracuse and looking so just lethargic in the process. I think is still something that it's hard to get out of your mind. But it does kind of, it at least makes the thoughts that we had before the season come back on the table, right? Like, yep. You know, going into last week, like, I'm thinking, you know, God, if we lose this one, we're probably starting 0-3. We're potentially staring down like a 3-9, 4-8 type season. And then Satterfield is like definitely going to get fired. He might not even make this weird. And now winning that game, it at least like puts the possibility back on the table of going 7-5, 8-4, you know, maybe even better if things just go perfectly, and having this not get weird at the end of the year with the recruiting class in Satterfield and all that stuff. So
hasn't it been so nice not to have to talk about like keeping the recruiting class together, like for 1 week? It's like, oh, thank God. Geez, I can just like focus on like a nice win, and I don't have to worry about like, although we had like the Ruben Owens.
I was going to say, and then
that was none of his doing, but.
Then I wake up yesterday, it's like, oh, Ruben Owens is visiting Texas A&M. I'm like, God damn it, can we get 1 week?
Yeah, I'm like, show him the yell practice video. Hurry, give it to him.
I would love Ruben Owens even more than I do already if he was like, this is the reason why I'm not coming. If he just like cleared that video out, and he's like, this is why I had to cancel. I'm done.
That video was, that was like jaw-dropping. I was like, Jesus.
These guys are the biggest losers alive. Like,
I know. I'm really starting to believe that, too. I was like, yikes.
There was one that I played. I played it on the radio show before the Super Regional against Texas A&M. It was from last year's game before Mississippi State. And it was, like, I thought it was the most embarrassing thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And then I saw the App State stuff. And people are like, oh, it's just, it's cancel culture. It's the wokeness. I'm like, I don't care that they're making shitty jokes about rednecks. I care that it's the lamest dweeb shit I've ever heard in my entire life. Like, it's just embarrassing. It's not like culturally insensitive or anything like that. It's just, these guys are losers.
I feel like corny played like in like the late 70s, early 80s. And I mean, that was more than corny. That was like, Jesus, calm down, guys. But
I mean, he made a joke about App State players not knowing how to read a map. This is a 20-year-old kid. Nobody's read a map in 15 years. What are you talking about? Like, he must have gotten that joke from his grandpa or something. It was just, and the fact that there are like 30,000 people at this thing all following along, it feels like the lamest cult of all time. It's very cultish. It's just,
If there's an A&M fan listening, I apologize, but I'm happy that I don't have any friends or really know anyone that's a diehard A&M fan. I'll say that. So now let me ask you this. Which game are you more nervous about? Cards, Florida State, or Syracuse, Purdue?
Can we all agree that the most hilarious result is like we beat Florida State, but Purdue beat Syracuse by like 75?
they'll be like getting ready to yell, and then they like won't know what to do. They're like, well,
nobody would know what to do, because like the pro Jeff Brom people like won't be able to fully rip on Satterfield, and like the, you know, the pro Satterfield people, like they, you know, they'll be like, well, we lost to these guys that Purdue beat by 70. It would be, I mean, regardless of what happens, the takes are going to be flying next week. But it's definitely an interesting dynamic going into this game. So I guess let's talk a little bit about Florida State. Actually, before we do that, can we give a shout out real quickly? How about U of L volleyball last night? Taking down Kentucky on national
TV. That was great. Yep. Man, they got it rolling there for sure.
I'm a DBK fanatic. Danny Busby-McKelley was the first coach to come on the Mike Rutherford show. It was before the Kentucky game last year. They're killing it. And it was very cool to see them play on ESPN. I saw the graphic. It said it was the fourth time in 25 years that ESPN has televised a regular season college volleyball match, and it was, you know, number 3 UofL taking down number 13 UK in 5 sets. Second straight win for the Cards over the Cats. And they're number 3 in the country. They're going to be chasing another national title. It was just a nice little middle of the week celebration. It felt good to watch that last night and felt good to celebrate it this morning. So, you know,
lucky. I wish they would. I wish they would like bring those girls out, like, you know, like they do in like honor them at the football game. I mean, they deserve
they probably
it.
Will.
Yeah. Like after the last like year and a half that they've had, you know, they've really put that, you know, they've put that sport on the map to where the entire fan base is behind it.
What they need to do is move some of those matches back to the KFC Yum Center, because the LNN Credit Union Arena is sold out every single game, which is cool, but also like they could fill the lower bowl for some big match. I mean, I went to the UofL UK volleyball match in like, I think it was like 2016, 2017. It was at the Yum Center, and it was, the lower bowl was pretty much entirely filled. Like they can do that. They probably need to start making that happen again. But that's what it's a good problem to have. It's a problem that comes with success. Let's talk tomorrow night, Louisville, Florida State. It is a 7:30 kickoff on ESPN. It's going to be a red out at Cardinal Stadium. They're going to honor Michael Bush's jersey. We have, you know, when we came to the ACC, I think, you know, everybody was more worried about Florida State than they were Clemson. FSU is kind of on top of the college football world at that point. You know, more than held our own against FSU. We're 4-4 against them since joining the ACC. We've won 2 in a row. It feels like we have better than a 500 record, because we could have won at least 2 of those games. Maybe you could say we should have won at least two of those games that we lost. We could easily be 6-2 or 7-1 against these guys. But they're coming to town just outside the top 25. They beat LSU narrowly in week 1. They destroyed Duquesne in week 0. They've got our former quarterback, Jordan Travis, who's playing very well. They seem to have a more dynamic offense than they've had in years past. They are 2-point favorites in this game. I don't think Vegas has any idea what to do with either of these teams, which is understandable. I've already admitted I've got no idea what to expect. Where's your excitement level for this game? 2, where's your confidence level for this game?
Excitement level, I would put at a 9. Confident. Ooh. Like this is a big game. Like I feel like this is going to change the momentum of the season, like one way or the other. Like we win this, we could take off and possibly do something special. You know, we lose, then, you know, we start hearing the hot takes from the fans again. But confidence, I'm like you, this one's tough. Like I'm 50-50. I'm not a believer in Mike Norvell. I'm just not. I don't know why. Like, I don't really have a reason to. I haven't watched enough Florida State. But I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's Florida State at the end of the day. I mean, they usually have talent. But I can't get last year's game out of my head, like, where we looked so good for most of the game. And I'm like, God, they can't. You know, Florida State couldn't have changed that much in a year. But I don't know. We'll see. I think it's going to be huge to have the home crowd behind us. I really do. I think that's going to be a game changer for us. Granted, I mean, I know Florida State has played already in a raucous environment, but so have we. So it'll be nice to have the fans backing us for once. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know we got to do predictions at the end here, but I have no idea which way I'm going to go.
Yeah, I'm expecting that, because the other big discussion this week has been, you know, what do you think the crowd's going to be like? I think the crowd will be very good. I don't think it'll be quite as good as it would have been if we'd been 2-0, but still, like, it's the diehards are going to be, you know, they're foaming at the mouth, because, you know, we haven't had a tailgate in 10 months at this point. They've been waiting the last 2 weeks just to get out there. It's a Friday night game. These are some of the best environments that we ever have at Cardinal Stadium. They're doing the red out, which I always think looks the best of the outs that they do. Bush will bring some fans in as well. And it's Florida State. Like, they're still a huge brand. They, you know, I know they're not ranked right now, but there's a difference between unranked 2-0 Boston College coming into your place and unranked 2-0 Florida State. It's still going, they still move the needle. They're still a big draw. I think people also recognize just how big this game is for the direction of the season. And, you know, the direction of the program, because if the season goes well, I think you feel good about the direction of the program. If it doesn't, you have to worry about blowing things up and starting from scratch. So this is a gigantic, gigantic game. I don't think it'll sell out. I mean,
I don't think it will either. I don't think it's going to be a sellout. I mean, God, like the way our stadium is right now, it might sound a little sad, but it's hard to sell it out. So
it is, it's very tough,
but yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's let me ask you this. What do we need to do well in order for us, like, where you feel confident? Like, what has to be the key for us to win this game?
Having Malik play like Malik.
I was going to say, we're going to have to hit on some long passes. I mean, not even that. Like, you know, if he wants to run, that's fine. But we're going to need him to kind of be a little bit of Superman-ish.
The weird thing is, if you go back and look at the last three Florida State games, and I know that this is, you can't read too much into past games. We found that out against Syracuse in week one. But Malik against Florida State has, by and large, like, beaten them with his arm more than his legs. It was either last year's game or the game 2 years ago when we beat them, where he threw the ball 40 times. I think it was 39 exactly. It's the most attempts he's ever had in a game. He threw for, I think, right around 300 yards and two scores and no interceptions. And he hasn't run it nearly as much against FSU. It's like we know that we can't beat FSU the way that we beat other teams because they have so many athletes on the edge. Like, Malik is a superior athlete against just about everybody, but against FSU, like, they've got guys who are quick enough and big enough to, even if they bite on the play fake, they're still going to get to Malik before he can get the edge. So we know that he has to beat them with his arm, and he's been able to do it the last couple of years. So I think he's got to get back in the passing groove. We also obviously have to find receivers who can get some separation and make plays when they have the ball thrown their way. But if we're going to beat FSU on Friday, I feel like the passing game has to be markedly better than it's been the first 2 weeks. That would be mine. Do you have anything in mind?
No, I mean, I'm kind of with you there. I was going to lean on the passing game. I don't know. Like, for whatever reason, maybe it's false hope, but I saw enough from the defense in the second half to where I feel like it's going to carry over. I just do. I mean, the fact that we saw it, I'm like, all right, it's in there. Like, we know it can happen. We know these guys can fly around. And when they kind of – it just seemed like we let the guys loose. Like, they weren't overthinking of where they needed to be. Like, they were just – everyone was flying to the ball. Now, granted, you know, in the future, will that maybe give up some big plays by doing that? Yeah, it might. But I would rather them play that way than, like, sit back and be reserved and, you know – let them hit the 10, 15 yard slants and stuff like that. So I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm confident in the defense. But like you, I think we need to click on maybe some passes over the top or some, you know, just some big plays out of Malik. I think if we do that, then I don't want to say we're going to be in good shape, but I think it could go a long way towards getting a victory.
I totally agree with you on the defense thing. Like, if your two options are A, take a lot of chances, potentially, you know, create some turnovers or some tackles for loss, but also potentially give up some big plays, or B, sit back and let every team just drive it down your throat for 6 minutes and then score, you've got to go with A. And it felt like we did a lot more of that against UCF and obviously reap the benefits there. So I hope we play the aggressive style. And if it results in FSU getting two or three long touchdowns, but we are able to counter that with a bunch of big stops behind the line of scrimmage and maybe a couple of turnovers, then it's worth it. And you have to trust the offense to be better than it has the last couple of weeks. I mean, Jordan Travis has been really – he was good at the end of last year. He's been really good the first couple of weeks. Can he do it for a full season? I think we'll find out. He's got a lot of weapons in the backfield. It also surprised me that this is the first time that Florida State's been 2-0 since 2016, and they haven't been 3-0 since 2015. It's just a wild stat to think about for a program that's been as good as they have for so long. Like, they're like, if you think we're prioritizing this game, they've got it circled as well. Not just because
you're right.
Of Louisville.
I could see them bringing a ton of fans too. Like,
For
them starting out 2-0, you know, it's been that long. Like, they're probably putting this game on a pedestal.
And you'll get all the, you know, I grew up a UK basketball, but I'm a Florida State football fans. Like, right. They'll be there as well. And I say that not like just trying to shit on UK fans. every time we've played a home game against them, there have been multiple people in our section wearing FSU stuff who are like, oh, I'm a UK basketball fan, but I've just always loved the Noles in football. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. I want to drop kick you onto the field. Like, this is, I respect UK fans in both sports more than you. Like, get out of my face. But they'll have a lot of people there. They always do. But they're circling this game, not just because it's, you know, not because it's Louisville or anything, but they want to feel like it's the real thing. They want to believe that this is not just a fluke. You know, who knows how good LSU is. I think they're waiting for some sort of just complete confirmation that they're going to have a good season or have a chance to have a good season. And if they lose this game tomorrow night, they probably lose on that. Real quickly, before we make our predictions on that game, the men's basketball schedule came out this week. There were no surprise games. I think a couple of thoughts real quickly. One, 19 home games is a lot at the KFC Home Center this year. If you have season tickets, you're going to, you know, get your money's worth this year. We only play one true road game in non-conference, which is at Kentucky. That's a little bit weird.
I'm okay with that.
I'm fine with it, too. I mean, we're going to be challenged enough. We've got It is a brutal schedule, especially early on. I mean, we have a stretch in December where I think we play five straight games against power conference teams. Like that just doesn't happen. It's an odd schedule in that you're playing three ACC games before Christmas. Like, that's also weird. I think we play Florida State, Miami, and NC State all before December 22nd. We do have 9 days off between that game against NC State on the 22nd and UK on New Year's Eve. Kenny Payne's one of those coaches who, I guess, is going to let the kids go home for Christmas, take a couple days off, reset, and then come back and get ready for UK. But it all starts November 9th against Bellarmine. We have three games that we should win, Bellarmine, Wright State, and App State, before we go to Maui for a really challenging run. We need to be 3-0 before we go to Maui. I'll say that. Because once you get back from Maui, you've got Maryland, and then you've got the two games against Florida State and Miami. If you don't win a game in Maui, all of a sudden you're staring down like six straight losses potentially, which would be just disaster. I don't think that's going to happen. Don't get me wrong. But then you have Western Kentucky right after that too, a team that waxed you last year. But I like the way the schedule is set up. I'm hoping it's going to be a fun year. I don't know if you had any takeaways or if you had a chance to look at it, but it feels real when you're in football and then you get the schedule in your hands for basketball. Like the best days are in front of us here. They're coming soon.
You know what my favorite part about it was? I feel like the past couple years, the ACC schedule hasn't been as routine as it looks this year. This year, it's like Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. I like knowing when my games are, and I love the Saturday games instead of the Sunday games. So I'm a big fan of that. And I definitely, I'm with you. Like, this team, you know, we'll talk more about it as the season gets a little bit closer. I don't know what to expect. If I was leaning one way or the other, I say it might be, kind of a tougher season. But I think it's nice for this team to only have one true kind of road game, you know, out of conference. So we'll talk about it more as we get closer. But I don't know, like, if you were telling me in the summer, I'm like, oh God, this team, like, you know, the roster, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, for whatever reason, as we get a little closer to the season, like, I'm like, well, this guy could be a little bit better. I'm like, here we go. I'm already doing it. So
you're doing the Reds baseball thing that you do every year.
I really am. I do this.
By the way, the Reds officially eliminated from the playoffs yesterday. I saw that. But like, we do this thing where like the season ends and we're like, we start making no moves and all of us are like, this is gonna be fucking terrible. And then like March rolls around and you're like, well, you know, I think we could actually be in contention until August.
I know there's like one baseball fan listening to this, but next year, like, the Louisville bats could be loaded. And if they have Ellie De La Cruz, like, that is the Louisville bats are going to be like a must get ticket in town. That's how, I mean, this kid is the most electric kid I've seen on a baseball field in a long time. I still can't believe he's in the Reds organization. So keep an eye on that if you're a bats guy.
We're going to fuck it up somehow. We're going to trade him for, like, I don't know.
No, we're not.
Albert Pujols for his, like, last on one leg retirement comeback special. I'm with you real quickly on the schedule. I like that we're doing the Wednesday, Saturday. Wednesday, Saturday is cool. On the other hand, it means that ESPN thinks we're not good enough to be on Big Monday at all this year, which is, you know, fine, whatever. We have a couple Tuesday night games, too, that are also going to be, like, regional sports network. But you kind of knew that going in. The expectations are going to be low nationally. You're going to have to prove people wrong. All right, before we do predictions for Florida State, do you have a Dana the Dumps for this week?
I was flying high this week, so I don't have, like, a really good one. The only thing is, like, we got my son's birthday coming up this weekend, and we, like, give him the option. We're like, all right, buddy, like, here's what you can do. Like, you can go – he likes to, like, rock climb and, like, you know, just like me, big rock climber. that's a joke. He loves, like, rock climbing and, like, these, like – Columbus is, like, the king of these, like, indoor – like rock climbing or like urban air or like ninja house places. Like, I don't know. He loves that stuff. And I mean, that stuff adds up quick. And so we're like, hey bud, you can, you know, have it at one of these places and, you know, you can have 10 to 12 people, like, or you can just have it at like a park and, you know, invite whoever you want. And he takes the numbers every time. He's like, I want it at a park. We have 32 people coming. I'm like, I told my wife, we did this last year. And like, I can't even tell you like what a sweaty disaster I was like trying to like pick up like 1,000 used water balloons off the ground while these kids are like basically trampling me. So anyways, we're going back to the park and Cam's request was, he wants to set up golf holes at the park where people can golf. I'm like, all right, Cam, well, here's a couple problems here. We're in a public park. I just, you know, I can't just take a shovel out there and dig for a golf hole. Second off, I don't know how to do it. Third off, you're left-handed, and all these kids are coming to right-handed. So I have the clubs for them. So you're just going to have to play the playground or whatever there is, okay? So, like we're kind of in a standstill on that. But I'll have to report back on the party. You know, I'm happy for him, but at the same time, I'm like, Kim, we can't do this anymore. I mean, we're inviting, you know, half of Dublin here.
Oh, Cam's the best. I love it. We had Virginia's party last weekend. She turned 3. It was a much smaller affair, like just family. But
see,
she started doing
the way to do it.
It was, but like, we're also getting to the, like, she was doing the thing where it was like, what time are my friends coming over? Like, this is the last year we're going to be able to get away with it. Like, we're going to have to start having friends, like, starting next year, I think, and I'm dreading it. It's gonna be terrible.
Yeah, no, I mean, our middle daughter, she's born 4 days before Christmas, Lila, and she just gets the shaft every year. We're like, sorry, honey, like, we're kind of mixing in with Christmas here. So, yeah, no, I feel for VA, but she'll get her crown soon enough.
She didn't nap, or she like took like a very short nap for the party. It was a fucking disaster for the first hour. Like, she's like opening presents. She's like, I thought it was going to be a mini kitchen. And like scream. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. It was so bad. My mom's like, well, that was a miss. I was like, Mom, she'll love it in an hour. I'm so sorry.
I was going to say, yeah, that just happens. It's all part of the early birthday stage.
Oh, it ended up being fine. She was great. She ended up playing with all the toys. We had a good time. It was a wonderful, wonderful night. Okay. Prediction time, Louisville, Florida State, 7:30 kickoff, ESPN, Friday night. Huge game for both teams. Does the Scott magic roll on? I'll go first since you nailed it last week. I'm hoping that like my pessimism from last week carries over into this week in a good way for the team, because I still don't feel good about this game. If we won a little bit differently at UCF, maybe I'd feel more confident, or if we'd been more competitive against Syracuse. I don't think it's going to be a blowout or anything. I just think it's going to be kind of an ugly game. Florida State winds up just being the better team because they have more athletes. I'm going to say FSU 28, Louisville 24 in a game that, like everyone against FSU, we feel like we should have won when all is said and done, but we just don't get the job done.
I mean, yeah, I could see it that way, but I'm not going that way. Going the other way. I don't know. Like, I'm putting the crowd on a pedestal here. I'm like, you don't understand the crowd. Like, I'm really putting a lot in this crowd, so I hope we show up here. I do think they're going to make a difference. I'm going to say 31-28.
Nice.
We win on a Florida State missed field goal at the end. That's my prediction. I think the offense finally comes alive. I think we catch a few breaks. And yeah, I have zero confidence in that pick.
I mean, you could tell me we win by 30. You could tell me we lose by 65, and I'd probably be like, yeah, what do you want me to do? Here's hoping we're all doing the John Candy from Cool Runnings again after this weekend. Yeah. It's the committee. They say we're back in. Let's do it. Let's all get back on the boat. Hopefully next week's episode is a very celebratory episode. It should be fun. Hell, if we win, it's definitely going to be fun. Please subscribe to the podcast. It's the best way to keep tabs on when new episodes are out there. Give us a nice rating. Give us a review if you want to. We'll read it on air. No new reviews still, so if you want to leave a review at some point over the next 5 or 6 days, there's a strong chance you will have yours read on the next episode of the Card Chronicle podcast. Thanks so much again for tuning in. Let's get this done. Come on, Scott. Go Cards. Beat FSU.
Let's go, Scotty! Go Cards, baby.